If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. We have Janet Fox here today. She is an award-winning author of 10 books for young children, including 3 young adult novels, 3 middle grade novels, 2 picture books, 1 middle grade nonfiction, with more coming soon. Her most recent books are middle grade Carry Me Home, about a pair of unhoused sisters, and Winter Garden, which is what we're going to be talking about today, which has received 4-star reviews. Janet is a book coach and a teacher and has an MFA in writing for children from Vermont College of Fine Arts. Without further ado, Janet Fox.
Hello, everybody. We have Janet Fox here, and she is the author of Winter Garden and many other books, I might say, as well. So welcome, Janet.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, I'm thrilled that you are here. We have been reading your beautiful books. I run a nature program here for children and their parents, and we just enjoyed your book here in the winter. can't wait to talk about it and really learn about your journey on becoming a author. So wherever you want to start, in terms of how you became an author.
Okay, thank you. Well, I've kind of been an author since I was in the third grade. just been writing all my life and got sidetracked. I went into science for a while. I have a master's in science. Maybe that has something to do with my love of gardening. And actually even went to the bottom of the seafloor in a submersible, which is kind of exciting and fun. Yeah. And then our son was born. And when he was starting school, we discovered that he's dyslexic. My writing, which had been all just freelance and playing with this and that and sending out short stories here and there and everywhere, began to focus on him and trying to help him learn to read. And really quickly, I realized that writing children's books is a whole different animal from anything I'd ever tried before.
Fascinating.
So I got involved with organizations like Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, and I met some really fantastic mentors, and the rest is kind of a learning curve that was steep, but super fun. And yeah, here I am.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about Winter Garden, how that came to be?
Sure. Well, I've been gardening since forever, but I started with a very black thumb, and then I have my best friend is a master gardener, and she's a fantastic gardener. She is on the East Coast, and I'm now in Montana, but we of course keep in touch. And she taught me everything I know about gardening. So I've been gardening for years and years, and then COVID hit, and we're in Montana. And we were in our cabin in the mountains, isolating, and it's all became very sort of dark and dreary. And I ordered online a light box for growing things indoors because it's the middle of winter here half the year. And it just felt dark. And I planted some microgreens, and I thought, wow, this is so great. I mean, I feel so energized by this. So I sat down, and this does not happen all the time. I'm just going to say, warning, pro tip, this is not.
The magic of COVID.
Right, the magic of COVID. I sat down and wrote this picture book in a day, and it was solid.
Are you serious?
Done. I'm serious. I couldn't believe it. And I sent it to my critique. I have a critique partner that I correspond with long distance. I sent it to her. And she came back and said, hey, go for it. So I sent it to my agent. She said, yeah, I'm sending it out. And she sent it out to two places and they kind of fought over it. And
really?
Then Neil Porter picked it up, which I'm really happy about because they're a wonderful, wonderful publisher. So, yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. So, yeah. And it's just the illustrations are also, I'm a lover of watercolor and I absolutely, it just goes hand in hand with your words and the illustrations.
Thank you. Are
just, and the title Winter Garden, is that because you were up in Montana and.
Yeah. Gardening in the winter. And it just felt like the right combination of things. And I'll say about the illustrators, and this is true of all traditionally published picture books, I have no choice in the illustrations.
Oh, really?
I don't participate as the author. Once the publisher accepts the manuscript, they send it to the art department and the art department decides who's the best illustrator for this book. So, and Jazu was, this was her second book for them and maybe her second picture book as well. And I just think it's masterful. It's just so beautiful.
It's absolutely stunning. It's
sorry about my clocks are all chiming.
Oh, in
the background.
That's good.
Adding atmosphere.
Absolutely. So again, anything else that inspired the story? It was you up in Montana and.
Up in Montana in the winter and just thinking about having this little garden on a windowsill. And I immediately had this image of a child in a city confined because it's winter, confined because they're in the cities. She can't just go out in the backyard and play and learning about this and then discovering the power of growing things and how and what they do when you grow them, that you can feed yourself when you grow them. I should take a segue back to because, and I often forget that I'd done this, but when my son was in elementary school and I was starting to really get into gardening, he was in an elementary school that was a Title I and it had not much going on, but they had a really nice property on the playground. And I conspired with a couple of the teachers to build gardens in their courtyard. And so I got really into building school gardens with these kids. And I sort of had a weekly session with the teachers and the kids learned to grow things in, you know, paper cups on a windowsill.
Yeah.
So, and I wrote a couple of articles for books about school gardens. So I probably somewhere in my subconscious, I was also pulling that memory of how those kids just were so fascinated with the whole process of growing and then growing foodstuffs because this was when we lived in Texas. And so it was much more amenable to growing actual crops during the school year. So,
it's incredible to watch. And that's one of the reasons why I started even outdoor classrooms. I've always been an educator, but when my children were in preschool and kindergarten, we started up a children's garden and started growing things. And I found that fifth graders at the time had never planted anything in the ground. Yeah. And to me, that was just like, it sort of knocked the wind out of me. And I thought, this is so wrong. Just that starting at the garden, but then when you see children that are outside and connecting with the earth and seeing things grow, like you were saying, just how the energy of seeing something grow in the middle of
the miracle of it.
It's a miracle. And I'm growing seeds now and it's just like, what?
Yeah.
This little thing is actually growing into something. So it's it's pretty magnificent. When you were inspired to write for kids, because you also have written other books. And
When I started writing for my son and realized I didn't know what the heck I was doing, and really picture books are so hard to write. I write about this all the time. I'm also now teaching other writers and I constantly am cautioning them. If you're going to write a picture book, you've got your work cut out for you because they're like a marriage of a poem and a short story. But in very spare terms, you have to present this arc of story without fanfare. And so they're really hard to write. So when I was struggling with that, because everybody I know in children's literature, almost everyone starts by writing picture books. It's just a natural thing. We become interested in the form. We're raising our small children. We see these beautiful books. We say, oh, I want to do that. And not thinking that they're hard. So after several years of trying to write picture books and totally failing serendipitously, I thought, well, maybe I should write something longer. And I started writing about a girl whose mother had died. And this is coming from my own experience because I'd lost my mom a few years earlier. And when I lost her, I found in her desk a stack, a huge stack of children's stories. I didn't know she was writing them. So I thought, well, maybe I could work on them. But then I quickly realized that they were not something I wanted to write, but I did want to write about the experience of being someone who lost a mother. So my first novel, the first novel that was published, is a story about a girl who's lost her mother. And it's historical YA. So my very first fiction piece was a young adult novel. Yeah. And then I wrote two more YA novels. And then I veered into, I'm getting older and younger at the same time. Because then I veered into middle grade fiction. And now I'm in picture books. So I'm still writing middle grade and older. But yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah,
thank you. Yeah.
So can you tell me a little bit more about your experience sort of as a gardener and also even teaching and incorporating? Yeah. Do you do teaching? Do you do anything specific around the book Winter Garden or in your teaching or the gardening?
I haven't yet because the, you know, Winter Garden came out in early November and then the holidays and so on. So I really haven't done anything specific. I did do a school visit recently and we talked about it and I'm doing a school visit with much younger kids in April. And I think that'll be the first time I'll have a chance to. And I did read it at World Read Aloud Day, which was just a couple of weeks ago. So I haven't really taught around it. And gardening for me is, here it's a summer thing. It's, I mean, I do have plants and I actually on my kitchen counter right now, I have some sprouts. So I do that. Yay. But gardening is a short, it's very short season
very short,
here.
So yeah.
you have to start things early. I have a small greenhouse so I can get things in the greenhouse. It's not heated. So I can get things in the greenhouse in April. When it still freezes at night.
Yeah, but that's amazing.
Yeah.
So, and what does a school visit look like for you? Is it just reading your book or is there more to it?
Yeah, there's much more to it. I like to, you want to really engage the kids in something. And so it depends on the age of the child. This recent school visit was mostly with middle graders. So I wanted to show them how I wrote one of my most recent middle grade book, Carry Me Home. And how that idea manifested and then how I found the character and how I create the plot. And all along the way, I'm planting, now this is what you could do. So, and I gave them a series of exercises that they could, and I was playing it by ear as to whether we did them live or did them later. And I decided, let's do them later because they were engaged with the discussion. And I had them answering questions by raising hands and so on. And I heard that they later took those exercises into the classroom and had a lot of fun with them. So that's a good thing.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just encouraging them to think about story and story craft and what that means when you both read a story and when you create a story. So
do you feel like kids today are moving away from that because there's so much screen time? Do you feel like?
I don't. I think kids are so, story is the heart of everything, right? Mm-hmm. It's the heart of when you go to school and you say, oh, guess what happened to me yesterday? I mean, it's that story is life. So kids get that. And I don't think that they are so engaged, not at that age, maybe as they get a little older, it becomes a more of an issue or sort of they're engaged on their phones or their computers or whatever, but even my dyslexic son, who is now a writer, by the way, published
really?
Writer.
Isn't that great? That's wonderful.
I'm so proud of him. Yeah. he has two ways of looking at his on-screen time. He has his games, which he plays, which I think have helped teach him structure of story. Hmm. And he has his writing time. And he really separates them nicely. He works really hard. So,
That's fascinating.
So I think if as parents and teachers, we engage with the idea of story in mm-hmm. every sense of the word, walking in the woods, let's tell a story about the birds that we're seeing as we go through the woods, or let's tell a story about how the trees are communicating, mm-hmm. or what do you think of if we engage in those ways? And I think we don't lose them at all.
Yeah, that was actually going to be my next question, was in terms of a lot of folks that are listening are nature-based mm-hmm. educators or mm-hmm. educators that are taking mm-hmm. their classrooms outdoors, or even parents. Yeah. And tips and tricks in terms of really bringing the story alive. And I love how you frame it as, well, everything's story. So
yeah.
So it doesn't become this thing that, oh, I have to become an expert at this craft. Mm-hmm. It's really seeing through a lens of, well, it's all story.
Yeah.
So how would you frame that? How would you, like, if I was listening and I'm like, oh, I can't do story, and how would you?
So it's pretty straightforward. If you think of story as an arc of change in something or someone. So even in Winter Garden, which is a pretty simple 300 word picture book, here's a girl who starts off saying, oh, what are you doing, Mom? What are those? She learns that they're seeds. She learns that they go in the ground. And then she's waiting, 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 waiting. So the thing that's kind of in her way, we call it the antagonist in an adult story, is time. She has to be patient. She has to learn how to be patient and wait for the seeds to sprout. And when they do, oh, and that's the midpoint of the book. Oh, look at that. They're coming out of the ground. And then they eat them. And then she says, but we've eaten them all up. We have to start again. This time she gets to pick the seeds, plant them, and put them in the pots. And mm-hmm. now she knows what to do. So she's changed. Something, it's a tiny, tiny, tiny change of her learning what happens when a seed goes into the soil, how to be patient, and then how to do that on her own. So she's, even though it's a tiny little change in her character and in her life globally, it's a big change for someone so little. So that's what you think about when you think about kids. Their changes are really little. Everything that they see is magnified. Like when in the pages where she sees the seeds, she relates to them with those tiny little words, seeds like freckles, seeds like the wings of bees. And she sees those things as big things because she's tiny, right? Huh. Baby greens, small like me. Buy a baby green. So I think just have the kids think about a change. Something changes. It can be an animal that changes. It can be a tree that changes. It can be a day that changes something. So the best books always have, you know, the beginning, the character ends up in a different place, even if that changes really tiny. Yeah.
I love that. And that is also can be a message to send to the educator who wants to be a storyteller to the group, to the children. Right. So it can be also for children that want to create their own stories, but also for an educator that may feel like they want to craft their storytelling skills, which we always talk about, and sort of just reading the book, but actually creating a story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's
exactly.
a beautiful art, to think of it as an arc.
Yeah.
I absolutely. Yep. And that's probably what you teach in your classes.
Yeah. It is. It is. It is. Even down at the, in a longer work, it's down at the scene level. There's a tiny arc of change. And then they all build to create a different person at the end of the book than the person was at the beginning of the book. that person is irrevocably changed at the end of a story from where they were at the beginning of a story. And that's what all stories are about, is change. And you know, our lives are always about change and growth and discovering something new about ourselves. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. So, that's beautiful.
Thank you. A lot of teachers are storytellers. I mean, I was a teacher for a while too. Mm-hmm. So in addition to doing the garden planting, I spent 4 years teaching middle school. Yeah. So, and I love, there's another example of change, right? You're watching these kids change before your eyes as you introduce them to some, you know, piece of literature that they've, then they're like, wow, really? Oh, that's cool. So.
So you had mentioned earlier about the, which actually surprised me, that the creating a children's book is actually a lot harder than creating a longer novel or piece. I think that's fascinating, because I think that's maybe why people think it's, oh, I'm going to go into this because this is sort of the easier way to, this is the easier route, but it's actually harder. And can you just elaborate on that a little bit more?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I see this all the time. I would say probably 80% of the people who come to me as brand new baby writers want to write picture books. And I think, again, it's familiarity because they're young parents, but it's also the idea that, oh, I could do this really fast and be published. And that's just not true. And part of that is that you have to think like a child, but really like a child. You have to know what age you're writing for, because picture books span a spectrum, right? They concept books for those earliest kids who are sort of pre-literate, and then veering into story books, which I consider Winter Garden to be on the younger side of the picture book spectrum, all the way up to nonfiction picture books, which kids read in middle school and even high school sometimes, and which are quite extensively written and with lots of details. And so they don't, you have to think about first who you're writing for, who is the audience for this book. And I had in my head a six-year-old. So I get very specific, a six-year-old reading this book, a six-year-old girl reading this book, a six-year-old girl reading this book who lives in the city. Mm-hmm. So get very specific about the reader. I tell them to create what I call a reader avatar. And then because that will focus their attention on syntax and diction, right? That they need to know that if they're constructing a sentence, it better be really short and they better use age-appropriate words. Because if they don't, then it's not going to work for that reader. They're going to be like, what? I also see a lot of people try to write in rhyme. Rhyme is really hard to get right. And I would suggest if somebody is listening and thinking about writing a picture book, try not to write in rhyme first. Try just to write a story, a narrative. I just wrote a picture book and I couldn't, it just came out with some, you know, with rhyme, and I'm fighting it all the way, actually. But I sent it to my agent. We'll see. It just happened. But I would, for a beginner, I think rhyme is really, really hard. The meter is really, really hard. And I see this a lot in people who are starting to write picture books. I would caution them not to write in rhyme if they can, to try to write it as a narrative story, to see it as that story arc, to try and cut the words right down between 300 and 500 words. Where the Wild Things Are is 305 words. I mean, it's like,
yeah.
And look at it. It was made into a movie.
I know.
Right?
Yeah. And I think it leaves a lot up to the imagination to, you know, what less is more, so to speak. That's what I'm sort of hearing, is that's beautiful.
Yes. Yeah.
And I want to backpedal even more, back to your teaching experience. So you were teaching middle school.
Yeah.
Did you take them outside? Did you connect the garden in any way at that point in your life? Or
I
that
didn't.
Hadn't erupted yet?
Yeah, it was, well, this was a private school, and the I taught eighth, and then I actually transitioned up with them into ninth. So it was kind of middle high. So these are older kids, and we were reading, it was American literature, and then it was ancient literature. So it was, we were reading pretty intensely, and you know, covering a lot of ground in terms of the work that they had to do. And no, none of it was focused on gardening at all.
Yeah.
And that school didn't have a very nice structure for that, unfortunately.
Yeah,
they were
it's
very
interesting.
Focused on the arts instead of on the outdoors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're getting we're moving towards it.
Yeah. I think it's really easy to grab those elementary kids in terms of getting them outdoors and working in the dirt. So I think if we get them at that age and they see that they can actually grow their own food, then they're hooked for life.
Yeah. It's a magic. I think it's a magic that's sort of out of our control, but
like you
said earlier in the very beginning, in terms of, you know, being up in your cabin and being isolated during COVID and then starting this garden, actually it gave you energy.
Yes. Yeah, it did. It was really transformative for me in the sense that I could feel like I was accomplishing something, giving some, you know, growing something, feeding us in a way, because we couldn't do anything else. You know, we were really, really isolated.
I feel like that was the gift of COVID in many ways, that it did stop everything. And then it made us sort of enter different parts of our mind and body and allow time. You know, it gave us sort of the gift of time and what we could do differently in that time. And I feel like so many things like your book, and I love that the book just came to you.
Yeah.
I mean, but you had all these different experiences, but it seemed like it just, at that, it was sort of a serendipitous experience.
Right.
And the fact that then you got this beautiful illustrator as well. It was like, incredible.
I know. I'm so thrilled. I'm just so thrilled. And I'm really happy with the reception. It's gotten starred reviews and it's really lovely. So
I run my nature program, and we run it through the winter. We go straight through, and I'm in Massachusetts. So it's cold here as well.
Yeah.
But this was such a fun resource and a book to bring to them because you do get a little, like you were saying, winter can be very long and dry and colorless.
Yeah.
And so to add something like your book to a story before planting seeds or something like that has been such a beautiful, and I really, really encourage all listeners to really look at and take a peek at Winter Garden, because it's just a beautiful book, and it's a wonderful, there's so many different things that you can take from it that you can add different activities and stories and become a storyteller as well. And it's not just, oh, let's go plant seeds, but are there any other ideas that you can imagine other educators doing extensions from your book?
Yeah, I have a couple of teacher guides on my website on the Winter Garden page if they want to look at that. So they're downloadable. And what I do when I go on school visits is I just have bought some bulk seeds, you know, from Johnny's Seeds or wherever, and repackage them in little envelopes, and I give the kids those seed packets and say, give it a try, and and tell them that they can use a paper cup, or they can put them in egg cartons and see what happens. And just the idea of even the sprouting of the seeds, even if they can't, you know, even if something happens and they don't get all the way with a plant that produces food, it's just such a generative process. So I would say, incorporate it into, you're growing and plants are growing, and what do the plants do? What's the symbiosis between humans and plants? Why do we, you know, what are we doing here? And and incorporate it into science lessons about how we need the oxygen that they produce, and they need our carbon dioxide. We need each other. So, I mean, there are so many ways to take growing things in the garden.
Yeah. And that's why I love it so much. There's just so many different directions in it.
And
it lands on people differently, you know, in terms of, or very similarly. That's the need.
Right.
And
what I really hope is that this demonstrates that you don't have to be in a rural environment. You can be in a very urban environment, and you can be without any access to, you know, the beauties of nature and still appreciate what happens in nature. So in a very small way.
Yeah. I love that you've noted that, because it's in a city. And yeah. I think people think, oh, well, I don't have the land, or I don't have X, Y, yeah. and Z, so I can't do this. But no, but the magic is sort of this, it's the same.
Right.
It's still
right.
a sprout. It's still the magic of putting this little thing into the ground and seeing what happens right. yeah. from that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are there any yeah. other tips and tricks or things that we may have missed, that stories that you might have that I might have missed?
I don't think so. I'll probably think of 5 or 6 after we get off. That always happens, right? Yeah. So the picture book that I just sent to my agent, I'm hoping she likes it, because I really like it. It's inspired by a true story about a little girl who finds an injured queen bee, and in the real world, she this little girl took the bee and put it in a box and was taking care of it. So I thought, oh, well, I can play with that. So I have a story about a girl who feels like, and really the heart of that story is that she feels injured in some way. She feels like she, and so I took my son's dyslexia by hints and said, she feels like she's, you know, not fully whole, but she nurtures this bee. And after a day, the bee actually flies away. So whether the bee, you know, can start a new hive, they can. So I'm just, you know, trying to create the idea that you can recover from, you can, if you have that nurturing support around you, and she has it. So, yeah. So I hope.
So how long will that, so you took it into your, you sent it into your agent. How long, what's the process? How long?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. So that one took me a longer time to write. That one was one that I had to really work on and struggle with and cut a lot of words and add a little more and change it here and change it there. So that took longer. So I went back and forth with my critique partner, who's invaluable. And then I sent it to my agent once, and she said, I don't think this is quite working yet, but please keep playing with it. So I did. And I've sent it back to her. She will now read it, decide whether it's ready. And then she may send it to the same publisher, because we got such a good result with this one. Neil Porter, but she may send it to other people as well.
Huh.
Then the publisher, the editor, whoever, will come back and say yes or no. And then if they say, on a picture book, if they say yes, generally that's it for me. I have to sit back and wait for the illustrator. And the illustrator can take years, can take a year to 2 years for the book to, yeah, I know. Well, this came out in November, and I wrote it in the winter of 2019. So there you go.
And
it takes a long time.
How do you go out and garden? Like, how do you, for therapy, just to like, okay.
as I tell my students, my writing students, write the next book. It's out. And even when they send it, if they send it out and they're trying to get an editor or an agent, I say, write the next book. That's out of your hands. Write the next book. Write the next book.
That's really
always
good advice,
be writing
actually.
The next book. Yeah. Yeah.
That's really good because, advice. So it's not like you're sitting around waiting. You just,
yeah.
you kind of give birth and then you move on to the next.
Yeah.
The next yeah. child.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So, and there are always things to do for all the books that are out, that if you're lucky enough to have more than one book out. So yeah. So I always say, write the next book, and it takes a long time. In the case of a novel, once it gets to the publisher or the editor, then it goes through a whole nother series of processes.
Oh my God, I couldn't do it.
Editing and editing and editing, and then copy editing, and then what they call pass pages, where it's passed around the publisher with different editors having some input and getting the cover art, and yeah, it takes a long time.
Wow! And so, what inspires you to keep going? It's quite a process.
It's quite a process, and I just love writing. I love the stories. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love finding the story. Yeah.
And the stories just sort of come, or is it something that, where does that inspiration come from? So
that's a great question, because great question to use in the classroom, by the way. Yeah. Where do those stories come from? They come from everywhere winter garden came from COVID, my experience with growing the plants. The bee one came from a true story that a friend flippantly turned to me and said, oh, did you hear about this little girl who found a bee and nursed it back to health? And I thought, story. Story. So my most recent middle grade, Carry Me Home, that had a different genesis. That's a story about a couple of girls living in a car. So they're homeless. Huh. And on page one, so it's no surprise, they wake up in the morning and dad is missing. And dad's missing for most of the book. And so the older sister has to take care of the two of them and try to keep their situation secret because she doesn't want to get separated. She's afraid to trust people. Hmm. And so that's her journey, is to learn how to trust people that care. And that story was based on a true story that I heard about a family living in a car with two parents and three kids. And I just thought, what would it feel like to be 12 years old, living in a car, getting dressed with all these other people in a car, trying to do your homework in a car, eating, you know, meals, and all of this, that whole feeling was so overwhelming that it actually took me 5 years of not writing a word about that story and waiting until the story, and that too, that was another story that just said, I'm here, and I wrote it in a month and done.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So, that's beautiful. It's beautiful, yeah. How you, and then your lens into the world is looking for those pockets of, call it sort of seeds of inspiration that evolve into.
Yeah. And then in the meantime, I was writing other books while that was doing its thing in the subconscious. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Oh, what a skill you have in art. It's really beautiful. It's beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, it takes a long time and takes experiences. And I always tell kids, don't ever, think that you're going to have one path. I mean, I thought I was going to be a scientist. I went to the seafloor and I've done other things all through my life. And now, I'm a full-time writer and teach writing. And the path can wind. It can twist and you never know. And don't ever sell yourself short, because my dyslexic son is 4 novels out for grown-ups.
So that's incredible. Incredible.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Incredible. So, and such inspiration from him. That's really powerful stuff.
It is. Yeah, thank you.
So
yeah.
Any tips and tricks? I can talk to you all day. Any tips and tricks for our community, for a lot of folks that are listening, our nature-based educators?
It's just really easy to grow a school garden, I would say. As I said, you don't need anything fancy. You can use paper cups on a windowsill just to get things started, incorporate them into science, incorporate them into literature. I mean, there are plenty of examples of nature and in the real world that then find their way into stories and ask them to find examples of that in the books that they read, how nature impacts the character. In fact, even in a book that you don't think about as being in nature, there's a world that the author builds, and how do they build that world? And what does that world feel like? Because a world is almost a character in a story often, right? You're in the desert. It's very different from being in a swamp. So how does the author use the setting of nature to impact the characters in a story? So middle schoolers or high schoolers, if you're reading Carl Hiaasen, who's sets all his stuff in the swampy parts of Florida, that's very impactful on his stories. So
I never thought about it that way. That's a really, because there is this void in terms of, well, how do you do nature-based education and all this with older kids? But I think actually what you just said was in even in the literacy that they're reading, to see I love that.
Right. Every story has a setting. What has the author done to create that setting, to create something that's impactful. Sometimes the setting is the antagonist in the story. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of books out there about nature being the antagonist. So how does the author use nature to impact any aspect of the story, or even in microcosms, in a scene in a stormy castle versus a scene on a warm summer's day or on a beach? That creates a mood. So you don't want to put the kid on the beach who's collecting seashells in with the monster. You want to put in the stormy castle with the monster. So finding those little ways to tie nature in at that upper level, it's all about setting and what the setting is doing to impact the story and the character.
That's a huge takeaway for me, because I am working with older...
Oh, good.
With teachers that are working with older children. And that is a great example of one of the things they can be doing.
Great.
Because they're constantly thinking, oh, it's so easy with the early years, which is true. But this is such a great example of how to really incorporate nature, but then even going out in the different seasons and how that might impact their own writing.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Lewis Sekar's Holes is a perfect example of that, mm-hmm. right? It's like, mm-hmm. that's the whole story, is that setting and how he uses it with the lizards and the mountain god's thumb. And
love that. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I could, again, talk. You are so fascinating.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I feel so honored to be able to sneak some time away for this interview. So is there anything else that you would like to share with our community?
No, just love that nature and get those kids out the door. Or if you can't, then bring nature into the classroom. I mean, I'm a big believer in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so, so, so very much, Victoria, for having me here. I'm just thrilled.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us here at the Outdoor Classrooms podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with anybody who you think would enjoy it, and follow us on Instagram. We'd love to continue the conversation. If you want to continue the conversation even deeper, please join us in the Circle community. The purpose of the Circle is to support, guide, and push you as you continually grow and sustain your outdoor classroom by providing the tools to help you set the right goals, then actually follow through in achieving those goals with the support of our amazing community. Each month, 24/7, you get guidance and support from myself. You get to begin your journey with our new member roadmap. You get access to our outdoor teaching bootcamp. You get to interact and learn from guest experts who are on our podcast. They come into our membership and join us to continue the conversations. You get to connect and collaborate during 2 live sessions a month. You get access to all our online workshops and masterclasses. You get to dig deeper with our membership missions each month, and you get to become an ambassador of joy for children. I hope you can join us. You get all of this. You get to become a member of our family at Outdoor Classroom. So I hope you can join us. I will share the link in the show notes, and we'll see you later. Come join us.